Welcome to Silence the Mind Cluck. I'm your host, Maria T. Finch, and I'm super glad that you're here. Get ready to quiet that mind and reap the rewards. Good morning, everyone. I am so happy today to have Dr. Jacqueline Kerr with me. Jacqueline, welcome, and please introduce yourself.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm a fellow podcaster now. I am the host of a podcast, Overcoming Working Mom Burnout. But prior to that, I was a full-time research professor at the University of California, San Diego, bringing in millions of dollars of research grants to research, health, and community.
Okay. Wow. That is fascinating. And so tell us about how you moved from that point in your life to where you are now.
A major burnout, which I didn't even really realize at the time was burnout. I wondered if I was having a midlife crisis or a mental health breakdown. Mm-hmm. And that's been 4 years now. And during this burnout recovery journey that I've been on, I started to understand that it was burnout. And I started to then look at the research around burnout. Obviously, coming from public health, I understood a lot of how it's not just what we personally bring to the table. It's also the workplace itself and even societal expectations. I'm a working mom, and that definitely played into it. So now I'm really much hoping to help other moms not struggle with what I struggled through, but also to change workplaces so that they are more supportive of all people who are caregivers.
Oh, that's wonderful. So tell us, how did you figure out that what you were experiencing was burnout?
Well, part of my journey was really to start writing more. Actually, one of my roles now is still a professional grant writer. So writing is something that I've always done. And in fact, as a young girl, I was in boarding school and I used to write letters from boarding school. And I have all those letters. There's hundreds of them. And actually, that was my way of processing emotions and thoughts and concerns. So once I started working with the coach and was doing a lot more writing exercises, I realized, okay, I just need to write about what I went through. And it was in that process I really started to say, well, actually, what was it? And I had remembered a colleague saying, do you think you're burning out? But it not meaning anything to me. But when I actually started to look at the research around burnout, and there's a whole field since the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And then I recognized the symptoms. So there's symptoms like exhaustion, overwhelm, but there's also cynicism. I suddenly looked at my field of research and actually was in a conference of 20 years review of our research. And I was sitting there going, we've achieved nothing. We've done nothing. This is a waste of time. And like an employee would write to me about some measurement device or protocol. And I go, who cares, in my head, you know? And suddenly from having this passion and being so, you know, appreciative of the detail of research, I was just going, this is a waste of time. So that cynicism is really a big part of burnout. And it's concerning when you're passionate and you start to feel cynical. It's like, what is going on? And then ineffective, you know, when you're working so many hours to achieve the same thing. And there's definitely other symptoms that I really recommend people pay attention to. Tired but wired was one that I had. Some people have brain fog. I was on the tired but wired where I just couldn't switch my brain off. I mean, constantly thinking about work. And then others were resentment and rumination and feeling really resentful against everybody around me and ruminating how that was affecting my life. So those are good tips to think about early, because we have this 12-stage burnout cycle. And actually, stage number one is the need to prove yourself. And many of us are stepping onto that stage, right? Stage number one. And if we could work on that and not having self-worth so that we didn't feel like we were constantly having to prove ourselves. But again, social expectations or even, you know, marginalized groups have to reprove themselves all the time. You know, women, even their research shows that we are rated equally as men on performance, but then when it comes to a promotion, a man's going to get the promotion because their potential is rated higher. And we still know even resumes that have a female's name versus a man, and they're exactly the same, that the man is always picked. So it's so important for us to understand these barriers. And of course, that's why we're trying to reprove ourselves all the time, because we have the evidence to show, okay, right, I have to work twice as hard. But for me, the message is, yeah, you probably do have to work twice as hard, but not 10 times as hard. And that's what we have to try and, you know, cut back on.
Yeah. Or you can choose to not play that game at all and work for yourself.
Exactly. Which has its own burnout challenges, as you know.
Yes. Yes. Yes, absolutely. So I have read some things that you've written about your inner critic and how you got to know your inner critic. So tell us about that.
Yes, thanks for that opportunity. Recently, I learned that I was an Enneagram 1. And on the Enneagram personality types, the ones have an inner critic 24/7. And that was one of the biggest clues for me, realizing I was this number one, because it really is an inner critic 24/7. And I didn't know that it was an inner critic. But once I started working with a coach, Well, actually, even before I started working with a coach, one of the courses I did was an acceptance and commitment therapy online course. And that was about anchoring your thoughts and recognizing your thoughts. And so it was encouraging you to write whatever thoughts you had down and think about it as though you might want to sing the thoughts to yourself, like to the tune of Happy Birthday or something. Or think about it being on a balloon. You're just trying to get distance from the thoughts.
Yes.
So I was like, well, what if I put my thoughts on a t-shirt, right? That kind of appealed to me. Imagine wearing a t-shirt around in the world with my thoughts on them. And my thoughts were, you're fat, you're ugly, and you're not enough. And I was just like, oh my goodness, imagine if I walked around in the world with that. And
what a powerful visual. Like, that's so powerful to be like, am I going to wear a t-shirt that says that?
Exactly. And actually, I worked with my son recently. He's 14 and he was struggling with some thoughts. And he's like, I hate myself and I hate myself for hating myself. I was like, oh my God, people would love that t-shirt.
Yeah.
So many people would relate to that and wear it with, like, you know, pride, I suppose.
Yes.
So I think that's part of it. So one is like getting that distance from it. And again, there's some humor in this, right? Because you suddenly go, oh my God, really? Would I wear that? It's almost too funny to wear. Uh-huh. So I started to you know, pull on the humor side of things. And then when I did start working with the coach, she was very much, okay, you've got to name her. You've got to draw her. And you've got to sort of actually have a conversation with her. So when I did that, my inner critic is one of the three witches from Macbeth, if you remember.
Okay.
Trouble, bubble, toil and trouble, fire, burn, and cauldron, bubble.
Yeah, yes.
Definitely a mean Scottish witch who swoops in on her broomstick all the time. And so I drew her, and I drew a picture of an old crone witch. I'm not great at drawing, but I could draw that.
Yeah.
And so it took me so long trying to actually then talk to her and have a conversation. I tried all the things like, okay, positive thoughts instead. That didn't quiet her. Telling her to go away, ignoring her, trying to explain everything and justify everything to her. That didn't work. And then I would have these like conversations in my head with her, and she was just so mean. And again, I kept kind of thinking of her as like this other part of my personality, and that I could say be on a comedy stage and she would be saying all the things like that a comedian has permission to say because they're pushing the edge, and she'd say all those terrible things, and I'd be on the other side going, but really? So then I started to write this script back and forth between us of, you know, like, okay, she says this mean thing and I justify why it's not me, and thinking about it playing out like as a comedy scene. And then one of the things I wrote in that script is, you know, what is wrong with you? Why are you so mean to me? And that's when she stopped. She went, oh, you're asking me a question now. You care about what I think now. And I was like, Yes, what? And so in my head, she was like this persecuted witch that basically, had been, always persecuted, burned at the stake, always, questioned for who she was and what she did. And it really helped me go, yeah, no, of course you're terrified. That makes sense. And so that's how then I really got to befriend her, because it was literally like she was like, "You want to talk to me? Well, make me a cup of tea." And I was like, "Okay, I'm imagining sitting down and having a cup of tea with this mean Scottish witch," and her just saying why she felt so scared and so persecuted. And so that was the key, right? Because that's exactly what our inner critics are. They are reminding us of the things we're afraid of.
Right. And I also, taking that a little further, at least for myself, with my inner critic, it's all protection. They're trying to protect me from a perceived threat. So getting to know them and thank them for looking out for me and for trying to do their best for me helps them step back so that my wise self can come forward. Have you had that experience?
Well, I think I the time where I felt it was like most scary and hurtful, but most helpful actually, was when I did a TEDx talk and we had to record it remotely because it was still during COVID. But then we're going to play it in like a hybrid event where people could listen in online. And so the night before that was getting aired on that live event, I went to bed and she said, "You're a fraud."
Oh,
And I
no.
felt sick to my stomach. I
I'm
just felt
sure.
so ill. And I was like, why is she telling me this? What's going on? And it was so physically, hard that I kept it in my head and I was like, okay, I've got to listen to this. What's going on? And basically, what she was trying to say to me is, you're very privileged. You're white, you're married, you're highly educated. You're standing up on a TEDx stage. Do not complain about your privileged life. And so it made me really go, that's true. I still have a story to tell. And, I struggled, even though I have all those privileges and advantages. So it was really just that every time I try to do a talk, a keynote now, for example, the first thing I say is, my inner critic told me I'm a fraud because she wanted me to acknowledge my privileges. And that's what I do. It's the very first thing I do in any talk I give. So it's, I mean, and then that empowered me. That empowered me to say those words that I had wanted to say and had f felt like I needed to say, but I didn't know how to start, just start out standing there saying, "I'm white, I'm educated. What do you think? I'm lucky," right? That didn't, it just was like, how do I start with that? But when I start with the story of my inner critic called me a fraud because she wanted me to acknowledge my privileges, it was like this perfect solution to a difficult, topic. And I was like, thank you. Thank you. That was like, she gave me permission. So definitely I have found that really helpful. But kind of the other thing I also did to help me, and this was an exercise that I read about in Tara Moore's book called Playing Big, was to find my inner mentor. And I enjoyed that journey so much as well. So when I found my inner mentor, it was a visualization exercise that you had to do. And essentially, you go away from Earth and you come back 20 years in the future and you meet your future self. And who is that person? So, yeah, I met
That's
this old
interesting.
lady. Yeah, I was this old lady, kind of like Jane Goodall, with long gray hair in an old English cottage full of books. And you sit down with your inner critic and they serve you something. So she served me tea and ginger cake. And then she said to me, don't be so afraid and just write. Writing is going to help you process everything. And then she gives you a gift as you leave, and she gave me a journal to write in. So that's what I discovered. My inner critic, sorry, my inner mentor, easy to say, my inner mentor is a writer. And so that's the gift to me, that anytime I'm afraid, anytime I'm upset, confused, that if I can write, then that's going to help me process those thoughts. It doesn't even mean that I have to write and publish it. It's writing for myself. And I do a lot of written publishing work, but it's the other side of that. It's that it's for me. So that's been really helpful too.
That's amazing. So for someone listening who has yet to kind of identify their inner critic, their inner mentor, or any other parts that they may connect with, and who might be listening saying, this sounds nuts, what, you know, what is, like, when you started to do this kind of work, what enabled you to say, okay, I'm going to go with this idea? Because the truth is, like, it's an idea to say, okay, who's my inner critic? Who's my inner mentor? Like, that's an idea that you can take and run with or not. But for someone who's thinking, like, how do I do that? What advice do you have?
Right. And I suppose if they're thinking it's crazy and they're still wondering whether it's something they want to do, then maybe it's not such a mean inner critic or so loud, or that you're not so lost. But I was so lost and suffering. You know, I literally would wake up and the first thought that came into my head was my inner critic starting to scream at me. Wow. So it was really persecuting me, and I couldn't get relief from it. It was exhausting. So I wanted to quieten it. I really did. And because I had done that first course on realizing that I wasn't my thoughts, I think that's one of the big steps too, because I can see that, as I mentioned, I was, you know, chatting with my son about it, and I was asking him, well, do you have this voice in your head that talks to you? And he's like, no. And so he can't even yet distinguish that it's not himself. So I think that was so fascinating to see, because I could definitely distinguish. Well, I mean, I think I had to learn to distinguish that it wasn't me. That's the first thing, realizing actually this is a voice and it's not you. You're not a bad person. It's the voice telling you you're a bad person. So that stage was really that first awareness. And then once I could start to hear it as a separate voice, but one that wouldn't shut up, it was just such a big desire to have relief. So as I say, I tried so many different things. I did an online course. I did coaching. I was reading books. So I was really, really looking for solutions to this. And I don't know if partly it just needed time, because I probably read the same thing and get same advice many times. But it really wasn't until the day when she called me a fraud that I actually got to the point of being grateful for the advice she was giving me. And so that was a long period. I would say that was like almost like a 4-year journey, which may sound very demoralizing to someone that's wanting to find a quick answer. And I think you can certainly help to let go of your thoughts by anchoring your feet and thinking about them as leaves on a tree, and just saying, I'm going to let these thoughts drop into the water and float by. And even that at least lessens the impact on you. It doesn't necessarily help you learn from them and to hear it as an inner critic that is there for a reason and for protection. So yeah, I definitely recommend, the steps of thinking about naming them, trying to draw them, writing the thoughts down on a t-shirt to make them comic.
I love that. I think that's great.
Yeah. Any of those things are definitely a start. And as I say, there are these visualization exercises online or through books that you can take yourself through. Now, I think I had been through several visualization exercises before, and I would have, I'd be in groups who would be doing that. And some lady would go, I can see myself. I'm in a blue dress and I've got jewels all over me. And I'm just going, I see nothing. I realized that visualization was challenging for me. So actually the first time I did the mentor visualization. I listened to it as though I was listening to a book at bedtime, and I just let it go into my ears, and I fell asleep. But funny enough, I woke up in the middle of the night and went, my inner mentor's a writer. And I went, oh, that's silly. How can it be? I'm a writer. So how can my inner mentor be a writer? And then I was like, but I felt this relief. I felt like there was somebody inside of me protecting me and looking out for me in the way that even though we can say our inner critics are protecting us, it didn't, you know, it felt like a harsh protection, not a comforting protection. So just to feel that relief, that was what then I went and did the same visualization exercise again. And again, I had to get myself into sort of like a cozy, sunny spot, a bit like a cat, and be a little bit sleepy. And like, I have to quiet my brain from interjecting too many practical and logistical thoughts into any of my inner dialogues. So,
yes.
Yeah. So I was in a difficult place and needed, very much wanted to be out of that place.
That's so understandable. For our listeners, some other suggestions about visualization. So I find that, and tell me, Jacqueline, if this works for you. So sometimes if things are going on too much for me and I'm trying to tone that down, I ask questions. So, and when I ask a question, I always get an answer. And then that creates a kind of inner conversation, which changes how I feel, because instead of just being bombarded by whatever thoughts are coming at me, it's shifted. So it's now a conversation. And then you kind of go, oh, okay, you know what? I'm not going to think that anymore. And let's move on from this. Or is that thought true? Is that thought valuable? Does that thought give me something? And if it doesn't, then okay, let's put it on a balloon and let that balloon go.
Exactly. I think asking questions in that way is so powerful. And I actually think that was the first time that it started to work for me, instead of trying to argue against this inner critic, when I actually said, why are you so mean to me?
Yeah.
Why are you doing this? And it was like as though for the first time we were sitting down having a cup of tea and having a conversation. And it was almost like she came down off her broomstick, sat next to me and said, oh, you want to know? Yeah, I can tell you why. And so I agree. I think that question is so important, because it does start to become a conversation, a two-sided conversation, instead of you sort of going, leave me alone, or I don't want to believe that, or you just go away, or that's not true. You know, all those things that even though you've got the two sides, it's not a dialogue, right? Whereas when you actually ask the question, it's an answer question. And I agree, there's always this answer. And actually, you know, one of the coaching experiences I went through, a lot of the coaches that I know out there, they've done sort of the Martha Beck training, and they do thought models. So where you write down a fact, you write down the thoughts you're having, your feeling, your action, and your result. And then you work through, how can you change any of those things? You know, you work through the negative cycle of the thoughts and think about, well, what could I change? And I had one lady who was in my coaching group who almost always would just change the thought to, I wonder why. And it changed every time. That curiosity, it changed her conversation with herself. And I sometimes would just borrow it. If I got to a thought model that I could not work out of, I would just go, I wonder why. And it changed my thoughts. It definitely did. So I agree. Asking questions of your thoughts it begins curiosity, and it changes the conversation. So yeah, I think it's such a fantastic tool.
Yeah. Curiosity is so important. Another one that I activate a lot is compassion. So it's like, oh wow, whoever is saying these awful things, like, gosh, you must be feeling really bad. What can I do about that? You know, can I offer you, like, okay, so if you can put it into a conversation with a friend or another loved one, so that you're like, okay, if they were saying that they felt like this, like, what would I say in response? If you can hear this, I apologize. I've got a gardener who's outside blowing something. So we're just going to keep going, but that's I apologize okay. for any distance. Kind of noise.
Yeah. It's in the yeah. distance.
Yeah. So no, anyway, so compassion yes. is another one that's great to engage. Like, yeah.
Because again, once I asked the question and then she was saying, well, I've been persecuted, you know, I hate how that happens to me. It's so unfair. I had compassion for her. I imagined her being persecuted over the years again right. and again. And I definitely felt that compassion. But it's interesting when you first say I have compassion for her, immediately I'm thinking that is difficult for me to have self-compassion. But again, it's having compassion with the voice. So it's not quite self-compassion and the way you thought about it sounded it, because I think that can be very hard for people. People who do have a loud inner critic and who are very hard on themselves. Like, you know, I beat myself up. It's similar to my son, I suppose. You know, I beat myself up for not being able to do better. And so I find it very hard to have self-compassion, and yet I can have it for, you know, any other mom that might struggle with burnout like I did. Of course, that's what drives me, because I so don't want other people to go through these experiences, and I have so much compassion for people who are struggling and who are, you know, marginalized at work. But to have it for myself has been really, really difficult. So again, one little guide that I have, and I noticed you had a dog there. So
yeah,
I have a dog now. His name's Obi-Wan Kenobi. The kids Ooh. Named him. Uh-huh. But we used to have an older yellow lab called Whiskey. Uh-huh. And so I would basically, I think I'd gone through one of Dr. Neff's compassion exercises, and it was like, who would talk to you? Who would be like your unconditional love, right? And I was like, my dog Whiskey is my unconditional, like yeah. unconditional love, absolutely. Yeah. So yeah. I would imagine asking him, hey, what should I do? And his answer would always be, just come and snuggle with me
yeah.
on the sofa. Yeah. You're enough. Just come and lie with me right. and relax. And so that's where I can sort of draw on that self-compassion. Again, imagining I'm having a conversation yeah. with my dog.
No, you know, but the reality is, like, whatever works. I always remind people that you can only have one thought at a time. And so if you've got a thought that's making you miserable, what can you do to just shift the thought? So if it's have a conversation with your dog, with your inner critic, with another person, you know, it can be somebody inside of you or not, but just it's, you know, thoughts are, you only get one at a time. And so a good way to stop the like beat down that so many of us give ourselves is to be like, oh, wait a minute. I only get one thought at a time. What do I want to think right now instead?
Exactly. No, that's such great advice.
Yeah. Well, we're getting towards the end of our time here, and I wanted to know if there's anything that you would like to tell our audience or share with our audience before we wrap up.
Yes. I know so many people are going through burnout at the moment, and they don't necessarily know that they are. They don't know what it is necessarily. Or, you know, in some cases, it's very hard to admit. It's very hard to admit that we're struggling. And unfortunately, the way burnout's sort of handled in society, it's you know, people say, well, go for a vacation and do some self-care, as though this is a problem that is your own problem and you're the only one experiencing it. Whereas actually, you know, there's a lot of people experiencing it, so you're not alone. And the fact that a lot of people are experiencing it also reminds us that this is coming from, yes, we bring ourselves to the table and we need to do the work we've talked about today. But there are also conditions in the workplace that companies are putting us through that really are not meant to be for a healthy life. So, yeah. Again, it's very hard when you're going through burnout to think about at all advocating for more healthy workplaces. But I think that's what we really need to sort of think about. And many people do leave their or change jobs because of burnout. So it's like, okay, what can you look for in a new company that will be different? And also, what can you do with yourself in the meantime? Because we have to manage our thoughts to be able to approach difficult topics clearly.
Yeah, and to just exist in this very complicated time in the world that we're all living through. So
exactly.
Yeah. So for people who are watching this on video, you'll be able to see I've got a little ticker running with Jacqueline's website. And for everyone else, this will be in the show notes as well as a link to her fabulous TED Talk. So Jacqueline, thank you so much for being with us today. And thanks for sharing your story and sharing all of your wonderful advice. I'm really grateful.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, you're welcome. All right, everyone, thanks for listening and we'll see you next week. Bye. Thanks for listening. If you found this content helpful, please like, comment, and share across your social media. Are you sick of Mind Clock clocking up your days? Book a free initial consult with me at mindclock.com and let's silence it. Thanks and have a great week.